Live from the Colorado Media School campus in Lakewood, Colorado, the premier radio show on GoMileHigh.com, this is The Press Box.
Broncos bring some late pressure. It's picked up. Tannehill. Try to go to A.J. Brown, and a flag comes in.
Pass interference. Defense number 23.
Chippy from 25. On the way. And splits the uprights like he's been doing it all night.
Love to see it, though. Love to see it.
Welcome in to another edition of The Press Box here on GoMileHigh.com, a part of the Be On Air Network. I am your host, KJ, joined by Tanner, Sam, and I have Ty running the board. As you just heard with that sound there, what an awful last drive there that ultimately led to the Broncos losing 16-14 to a team that I think should not have been in the AFC Championship game, but they made it anyway, the Tennessee Titans. So, as we look at the landscape of how this whole thing played out last night, it all comes down to the last 2 minutes of the game and Vic Fangio failing to use the timeouts properly. A lot of people would beg to differ that, you know, they gave up a lot of kicks. And, yes, I agree that, you know, he missed a lot of field goals. He missed the extra point, which gave the Broncos a couple of more opportunities. But there was nothing like mismanaging a moment that could have gave Drew Lock way more time that ultimately could have helped the Broncos get in a better position to possibly win down the stretch.
Well, not only that, the minutes before that too, let's say minutes from the 7.5 down mark, every Broncos possession, or as soon as the Broncos took the lead off the Melvin Gordon touchdown from the 1 yard line, they were not playing with the intent to ice the game, to slow down the clock. They were hiking the football with a lot of time on the play clock still. And it just felt like they weren't trying to trust their defense so much as they were thinking that they would have to score again on the turnaround. That's the impression I got. But I think that I agree with you. That is the bigger issue, the mismanagement of the timeouts in the last 2 minutes. But there was also poor management on the other side of the spectrum in the minutes before that, I think.
Yeah, no question about it. And the first part that he described, ladies and gentlemen, that is what you call lack of complementary football.
Yeah, I mean, the drops didn't help. It also didn't help the play calling either. Like, there was a lot of third and longs. There's a lot of bad situations that the offense got themselves into with a lack of execution, too.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, you got to manage the clock, and you got to manage it earlier, not in just the last 2 minutes of the game. I mean, there was a lot of things that he could have done differently. Like, there was one drive that stuck out to me where it was, I think, a 31-second drive for the Titans. And the Broncos come back and are off the field in 59 seconds. It's yeah. Like, you gotta run smart plays and get first downs or at least, you know, possession time.
Now, on that same drive, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was the same drive that Jerry Jeudy had that crucial drop.
That is.
That could have got them the first
that
down.
In on, like, that 12-yard in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, do your thing.
No, you got it.
I was just going to kind of go a little bit away from that. Jerry Jeudy had some bad drops in this game, but I'm not super worried about Jerry Jeudy going forward. He was able to get open, and the fact that he was so open on all of these like wide open drops is a good sign to me of things to come.
Just rookie jitters, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and this is the generic excuse that everyone's been throwing around this entire past couple days, and this is essentially preseason football. There was no preseason. This is the first time these teams are going at a fast pace against other teams, so those types of things are naturally going to happen.
Yeah, right. They were talking about it on the radio today. And at one point, you could hear the defender tell Jerry Jeudy to get off the field. And he used an explicit word. And Jerry Judy's not been talked like that when he was at Alabama. You know, he was respected. And who knows if he's ever been, you know, talked to like that. So, I mean, I think that's a big contributing factor is he's just got to learn to play at the pace of the NFL and the aggression of the NFL?
I don't think it's the aggression aspect. You know, a lot of these guys, especially growing up down there, or not really growing up down there, but playing football down there in Alabama, like, yeah, he's respected, but yeah, that doesn't mean you don't have Nick Saban and the rest of the Alabama coaching staff harping on you at all hours of the day. Even when you're doing well, you got that coach staff harping on you. So I think he's used to the aggression of all of it and having people yell at him, belittle him, the mind game of the NFL.
Honestly, I think it's more of a game speed type thing.
Exactly.
A lot of those drops seem to be, both of his drops seem to be concentration drops. He was more concentrating toward what comes after instead of securing it.
Yeah.
And was more getting his minds together, getting it. And I think he's going to be fine going forward. You know, he's gonna really redouble his effort in practice. He's experienced the game him now, and he's gonna have that mindset. He's gonna know what to expect now.
Yeah, no question. I agree with you. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that he was just trying to get those jitters out the first time. You know, it's the first time in the bright lights. You're trying to figure out, you know, what is this game all about now. Here's the scary part. He was experiencing that first time in the lights with not really any fans there besides the family that they had. God forbid that stadium was packed out with, you know, 75,000 plus people screaming in your ear saying, "Let's go Broncos." So that's one other aspect to take into consideration. I think let's also look at the injuries. As everyone knows, they lost Von Miller. They were without Courtland Sutton, KJ Hamler, and they lost AJ Bouye, who now has a dislocated shoulder, I think.
Yep. Yeah, so, and they lost Phil Lindsay.
Yeah, and Phillip Lindsay to a turf toe. And anybody who knows turf toes,
that sucks.
That stuff does not go
unless
away.
Unless you're a Melvin Gordon fantasy owner.
Yeah, I'm happy about that, but not happy about Lindsay.
I know.
Yeah. So it's going to be a tough road, and I think the Broncos understand that patience is going to be the key here. So one thing that I definitely wanted to harp at is – with this game that they did not take time to cherish to get the win, that's basically what I'm saying, is the fact that they didn't actually get the win, will this potentially come back to haunt them later in the season?
Obviously, man, you want to win as many games as you can. The AFC is looking competitive, but
yeah, and the thing is, the Titans and the Texans, those are the only two teams in the AFC South. So if it comes to that, the Broncos are going to be contending the wild card with the Titans or the Texans.
Exactly what I was going to say. The AFC, there being the addition of another wild card team going to 7-6, you know, a third wild card team, the Broncos really are – that's kind of the big market. The Broncos are in that big market of teams that's going to appeal to, you know, those teams that are kind of okay but not really super great, but they don't suck. The teams that usually it's like the worst place you want to be because you just miss the playoffs but you also don't get a very good draft pick. I think that's where the Broncos' destiny this year is, to kind of be in that seventh seed in the AFC, if anything. But no, man, like, I don't think it's gonna hurt them in that sense, but I think that they're gonna draw experience from this. They're gonna learn from it. This was a game where all the experts had predicted the Broncos to get blown out after the Miller and Sutton injury news came out, and the Broncos came out there and played really good defense against a AFC championship team without their best player, and they were able to move the ball a little bit without their best wide receiver. So I think that this game being as close as it was and being played how it was will almost help them going forward.
You know, there were a couple bright spots that I really looked towards. We did not get a single holding call from Garrett Bowles, and the penalties were very. I mean, it was a fairly managed game in discipline.
But the ones
on a couple, and they got definitely cost them. You know, I don't know what happened with that. They never showed the replay on TV.
Oh, you talking about of the
Alex Johnson? I think he hit Henry
on Ojemudia's pick on the sideline.
There was some costly ones. Yeah. And
I think someone.
But then the other thing is,
I think someone on Twitter
did a third down efficiency. It's, you got to get better at that. You can't be 3 of 9 on third down.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that sometimes the Broncos, and we've seen this last year, they get comfortable with playing it safe. And sometimes they won't go ahead and take the kill shot to continue to push the drive along.
Exactly. I'm going to go off what both you just said. I want the Broncos to be more aggressive and take those kill shots. And to your point, there, in my opinion, there shouldn't be 9 third downs in a football game. I think that you need to be more aggressive on first and second to be converting. It's the modern day NFL. You know, it's not 3 yards, 2 yards, and then a 3rd and 5 is a win anymore. You don't want to ever see 3rd down in today's NFL.
Especially near the goal line.
Oh, in any sense, you never want to see 3rd down, but you want to be able to convert that, and you do. But I think 2nd down is a new 3rd down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think you need to have that sense of urgency to convert on the sticks earlier.
Yeah, now that I think about it, their game plan early looked a lot like Marty Ball. Mm-hmm. It was run, pass, and then whatever happens on 3rd down determines the next thing.
Exactly.
And it was run, pass, rinse and repeat very early.
And that was Scangarillo's offense, and I can't do it anymore.
And I know they were trying to protect, Wilkinson and Bowles, but in the second half, they went away from Noah Fant. Noah Fant was basically carrying the receiving corps in the first half. And I think that really says a lot about either the blocking or the play calling. We'll figure it out over the next few weeks, but man, you cannot go away from Noah Fant when he's that hot.
No, sir.
They might have had, focusing him in coverage, you know, some pretty good DBs on the Tennessee Titans. You got a Dory Jackson.
Well, he was out injured.
Yeah, he's on IR.
They should have taken more deep shots. They took that one deep shot and Drew overthrew him by a mile.
Well, Kevin Byard is back there. He was a Pro Bowl safety for the first time, I think, if I'm not mistaken, last year. And you don't have anybody to go take that deep shot right now. You are missing Cortland Sutton, who's your go up and get a guy. You are missing KJ Hamler, who's your speedy guy. Like, you really didn't have anybody that could go get that. I mean, maybe Tim Patrick.
Maybe.
Unless he sent Noah Fant. That would be the only other one.
Yeah, but he's fast, but
he's not a running down the sideline, take the vertical shot and go up and get it over somebody, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, Jeremy Grant and Michael Porter Jr. have been on the requisite end of some touchdown passes from Nikola Jokic themselves. So we'll discuss on the other side whether or not the Nuggets really have a chance to score and win the game in Game 7.
Yes,
as
sir.
Look to head to the Western Conference Finals. This is the Press Box here on GoMileHigh.com, a part of the Be On Air Network.
Every day, across this country, hundreds of college radio stations take to the air, broadcasting music and programming that you won't hear anywhere else.
It's one of the last places where people can really be able to actually say what they want to say.
Without it, you wouldn't have a place for local artists to perform. Certain people need to have a chance, a fighting chance, and college radio is that place for it.
College radio changes the lives of those who are involved with it and can change those who listen to it too.
This is where we start out, you know? From getting all this great experience working in college radio, it makes you want to work in real radio.
College radio means finding yourself. It helped me find what I wanted to do in not only school, but in life.
So support college radio by continuing to listen to this station and supporting the students who make it happen. College radio, now, more than ever. A message brought to you by this station and the College Radio Foundation. For more information, please visit collegeradio.org.
Taking a trip over to Tibet, you know, see the sights, climb a hill or two. But I remember, oh man, I got one guy out here who I actually know. So I give an old ringy dingy to the Lama.
What?
You know, the Dalai Lama, his laminescence, flowing robes, grace, bald, striking really. I says to the Lama, hey, you remember that round I caddied for you down in Shangri-La? Well, apparently some station out in Lakewood taped the whole thing.
Oh.
See, the Lama's a big hitter. Nailed 2 eagles in a row that day. Well, he says, what station could have possibly gotten all the way out to my sacred holy lands, the Shangri? I says it was none other than GoMileHigh.com, Lama.
Uh-huh.
They got the best sports coverage in the state. The Lama actually tips me this time, 2-1. So he pretty much stiffed me again. But I got him hooked on GoMileHigh.com. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
That's great.
Go Mile High.
Camelot.com.
Hurry, young Papsy, we must make it back to Camelot so I can listen to GoMileHigh.com.
Oh, who goes there?
It is I, King Arthur, on his mighty steed. Let me in the castle at once. I must get to my quarters to listen in to the best in Colorado's sports lifestyle programming.
But, sir, don't we live in medieval Wales?
No, Popsy, you mustn't ask questions when I'm listening about my beloved Broncos. Ah, GoMileHigh.com.
Hey, Colorado sports fans, you're listening to GoMileHigh.com, a student-operated station live from the Colorado Media School Studios here in Belmar, giving you a different perspective on all things current.
Stop torturing yourself, man! Live in the now!
So stay tuned to see what's coming up next on GoMileHigh.com, Colorado's sports lifestyle.
Showing!
And welcome back to the Press Box here on GoMileHigh.com, a part of the Be On Air Network. If you want to tune in or if you have anything you want to add, you can always give us a call at 303-937-6548 on the CMS listener line. Or head over to Facebook, give us a like at GoMileHigh, or head over to Twitter and give us a follow at GoMileHigh. The Denver Nuggets, they're doing what most people never would have dreamed of in a million years.
Doing the impossible.
The absolute impossible.
Trying to become the first team to do something in the history of the NBA.
There
history
you go.
Sports.
Come back from down 3-1 in back-to-back series, but specifically in one playoff run.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
And when you think about how they got here, a lot of people said that they weren't even supposed to be here. The Utah Jazz was supposed to beat them. But they owned the Utah Jazz throughout the season. The only difference between the playoffs and the regular season was the Nuggets' defensive intensity was not always there in the playoffs. And it's the same thing in the Clippers series as well, you know. And so that kind of leads me to this. Did we expect the Nuggets to be at this point? Like, did we seriously expect them to be at this point?
Honestly, yes, especially okay. Now, are you asking when did we expect them? Like, at what time point? Like a week ago, before all this started.
At the point of being in a game 7 with the Clippers.
Like, I think to answer your question, to start this series, I don't think game 7 was going to be the issue. I think the Nuggets were going to win early, or the Clippers were going to win early. But I think going back to before it all started, like at the very beginning of the bubble, I thought that the Nuggets, like all of us, were a very probable candidate to potentially make it out of the West and make it to the finals, because we looked at the talent that they had and stacked it against the talent around the rest of the Western Conference. I thought that it could compete, thought they could, if they found that dynamic, that flow, they could really do a lot of damage. And, you know, I think they found that flow. I think they're doing some damage. And I think the key was just really stepping up and doing some more effort on defense.
Yeah, one thing I
proceed. Keep going.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, one thing I heard, and it's very true about the Nuggets, if they're not scoring on offense, then their defense just kind of goes to the trash.
Oh,
but if they get scoring, if they get a little bit of a jolt, it's like their defense just wakes up and comes alive. And I think they just need a little jolt, and like Paul Millsap gave them a great jolt in the last game, I feel. And, you know, they just got to keep it going. They're definitely rolling right now.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah, I feel like they need to get more aggressive at the line. They need to be aggressive on offense. Because the way to really get to the Clippers, the way to get it to them, is to really get Jamal in a rhythm, to get him active, get him going, get Jokic active and working, and to get to the line. Because that was the huge difference in both of their comebacks.
Yeah, and I want you guys to recognize something about Game 6, if you haven't already, is when the Nuggets offense was rolling, the Clippers, their desperation defense was to try to trap. And the reality is the Nuggets, when they are rolling and they're flowing, like they move the ball too well to really trap the ball, because between Murray and Jokic, you know, they're two of the best passers probably in the league. I know for sure Jokic and Murray, he's still growing as a passer, but he's a very solid passer, to say the least. And so taking that into consideration, I think, the Clippers, they want to play them one-on-one, but I think the Nuggets have kind of found something on the one-on-one, playing them one-on-one, and that is whenever they take them in the screen and roll, most of the time they try to trap the person that is rolling and not the screener. And so they try to take the driver and see if they can stop the driver, but they don't never stop the roller. That's what I was trying to say at first. And so oftentimes they usually end up giving up a bucket or giving up a foul because they have a hard time trapping the roller and just sticking with the roller versus trying to trap whoever was getting screened. So,
yeah. Defensively, I think the Nuggets need to hold Kawhi, Paul George, and Lou Williams under 50% shooting again, each individually. They were able to do so this last game, and while Jokic, Porter, and Murray for the Nuggets were able to shoot above 50%, that's going to be a big thing to keep an eye on as well. Do you think Gary Harris makes the contribution he made in this last game in Game 7 again?
Offensively, no, but defensively, I think so. I think Gary
Harris. You don't
think
he's good for 16?
Huh?
You don't think he's good for 16?
No. I was surprised to even see that he was able to get 10.
Yeah. Okay. I think honestly, his hip is feeling a lot better, and he's starting to feel a lot more comfortable in the game and just kind of get the mentality of fighting in the game. And so it looks like he's definitely going to be a good help on the defensive side of the ball. I would go under 16 if I had to pick, though.
Yeah, especially since the Nuggets tend to struggle shooting in these Game 7s.
Well, see, that's another thing I worry about. If the Nuggets can't struggle shooting, because if the Clippers are able to shoot above 50%, like I was just saying, with these studs here, and if Montrezl Harrell wakes up, figures out that he was the sixth man of the year, and starts playing like it, this could be a really anticlimactic Game 7 for the Nuggets if they don't come out hot and banging a lot of these shots, because there's still a lot of firepower on that Clippers unit, on both whoever you want to put it there. And yeah. I think that it's dangerous water if the Nuggets aren't – I think this game needs to go like this. It's one of those games where the Nuggets catch the lead early, like late first, early second, and just maintain the lead the entire game. I don't think they can go back and forth right now in this.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think another key to the game for the Nuggets to potentially win is going to have to be whether or not Paul Millsap has it going. Like, if I'm Michael Malone, you can't hesitate on putting Michael Porter Jr. in. If Paul has it going, great. Extend his minutes a little bit. But if he doesn't have it going, you got to ride Michael Porter Jr. and give him at least 30 to 32 minutes tonight, because his scoring is going to be invaluable. And not to mention, he's become probably the team's best rebounder. I mean, a lot of people would say it's still Mason Plumlee or maybe it's Jokic, but I really believe that MPJ is the team's best rebounder now.
It's no competition. MPJ is definitely the Nuggets' best rebounder. He can do it on both ends. He can do it much more actively than Jokic or Plumlee. And, Plumlee's better on, defense in the post, but, MPJ is going to learn.
I feel like MPJ kind of had his head down after the game comment four. He made, and, he kind of got put in his place, and I think he's realizing his place now, and you see him moving around the floor. When he goes for rebounds, he's so smooth, and one of the things that he does best is he's a cutter. And he can cut across the lane and not even get touched. And I think that's a really useful thing. And if, depending on how the Clippers end up shooting, if they can actually hit shots, they might need to get Michael Porter cut into the basket, on the offensive side too.
Yeah, it'd be great to get him cutting. But with Kawhi there, man, whenever you got the defensive, you got three all defensive players on the Clippers right there. And trying to drive in on that is scary. I mean, Jamal Murray learned firsthand what trying to drive in on that looks like. So cutting, if you don't have a perfect lane, and if you try and force anything, like if you're Jokic trying to force that pass on the cutting Porter, could be bad news. I just feel like anything in the paint has been really hard for the Nuggets to get this series.
Yeah, no question. Yeah. And so to that point, now I'm coming back to you. I just want to add that lately in the last two games that the Clippers have lost, whenever they ran a screen and roll with Paul George would kind of like, he will take it to a certain extent and then he will back off. And he expects a big or someone else to be there. But the reality is, it's harder for them to rotate because they don't want to come off of Michael Porter Jr. They don't want to come off of Gary Harris or whoever's shooting the ball. And so it oftentimes leaves Paul George in situations where he has to pick up fouls that he doesn't want to pick up.
He definitely looks frustrated.
Yeah. I mean, you can be frustrated at the game. Probably going to be a little frustrated right now heading into a game 7 after coming down off this 3-1. And I'm not sure if you guys seen everything on Twitter. The Clippers have been getting dogged on Twitter by everybody.
Everybody.
All the troll accounts coming out the woodworks coming for this to troll these Clippers here. So I think that they're in their own heads. And I don't mean, they got the Iceman over there. They got Kawhi, but I think the momentum is with the Nuggets still.
I mean, what happened to Lou Williams? He just dropped off the face of the earth.
Him and Montrezl Harrell, man. They've disappeared.
They don't like the bubble life. They need those chicken wings.
It's the wings, man.
I think it's something else that starts with a W and it ain't wings.
Well, that's probably true.
Maybe. Oh, you know what?
Who knows?
Do I want to talk about this right now? No.
Are you talking about House?
Yeah.
You talking about House? I mean, imagine if you his wife and you find out.
You know what I'm talking about.
Imagine if you his wife and you find out that your husband is cheating on you from an NBA scouting report
saying that
in the bubble, this man has been suspended for inviting over a COVID testing nurse to his room. And that's how you find out you're being cheated on. Oh, my God.
Hey, look.
Now
he's going to have to call James Harden and let him and say, hey, James, can I come stay with you for a little minute?
The place to crash.
For real.
That's funny, dude. It's horrible for her, but funny situation.
It's crazy. Last question before we hit the break here. If the Nuggets lose tonight, is this season a failure?
No. No. I mean, no. To say briefly, this whole season is an experiment, in a sense. You know what I mean. So if the Nuggets made the playoffs, I think that if they had gotten washed out by the Jazz or washed out by the Clippers, you could probably say it was a failure in some regard. But in this fake, air quotes, fake, almost like pretend makeshift season that's going on right now, Nuggets came back from 2-3-1s, forced 2 game 7s. There's a lot to build on there, a lot to be excited about.
Interesting question. The season itself won't be a failure, but the offseason will be affected if they lose, is here. I feel like it'll be less attractive for incoming free agents if they lose.
Oh,
here.
Shut. You can't even push that. Is Denver. When has Denver ever been attractive for any free agent in the history of the NBA?
We're a flyover city. Exactly. We always have and always will be.
They legalized weed out here, and they still can't get free agents to go over.
You know, Charles Barkley said it on the morning show.
I'm not talking about the ones incoming. I'm talking the ones who are about to be free agents. I'm talking the ones who are outgoing.
I mean, I'm not talking about
Jeremy Grant. I'm talking about
Millsap?
Not Millsap.
Well,
not
he's on his way out, and I don't care about him, but maybe.
No, I don't care if Millsap goes either. I'm worried about Jeremy Grant and Plumlee.
Well, look, while one team's fighting to get to the Western Conference Finals, the other team in the city is fighting to potentially get in the playoffs. And, you know, unfortunately, the Avalanche maybe didn't do it, but maybe the Avalanche that they started caused a little rockiness down at the bottom of the mountain. So we're going to see if the Colorado Rockies can potentially get in the playoffs. This is the Press Box here on GoMileHigh.com, a part of the Be On Air Network.
Every day, across this country, hundreds of college radio stations take to the air, broadcasting music and programming that you won't hear anywhere else.
It's one of the last places where people can really be able to actually say what they want to say.
Without it, you wouldn't have a place for local artists to perform. Certain people need to have a chance, a fighting chance, and college radio is that place for it.
College radio changes the lives of those who are involved with it and can change those who listen to it too.
This is where we start out, you know? From getting all this great experience working in college radio, it makes you want to work in real radio.
College radio means finding yourself. It helped me find what I wanted to do in not only school, but in life.
So support college radio by continuing to listen to this station and supporting the students who make it happen. College radio, now, more than ever. A message brought to you by this station and the College Radio Foundation. For more information, please visit collegeradio.org.
Taking a trip over to Tibet, you know, see the sights, climb a hill or two. But I remember, oh man, I got one guy out here who I actually know. So I give an old ringy dingy to the Lama.
What?
You know, the Dalai Lama, his laminescence, flowing robes, grace, bald, striking really. I says to the Lama, hey, you remember that round I caddied for you down in Shangri-La? Well, apparently some station out in Lakewood taped the whole thing.
Oh.
See, the Lama's a big hitter. Nailed two eagles in a row that day. Well, he says, what station could have possibly gotten all the way out to my sacred holy lands, the Shangri? I says it was none other than GoMileHigh.com, Lama. They got the best sports coverage in the state. The Lama actually tips me this time, 2-1. So he pretty much stiffed me again. But I got him hooked on GoMileHigh.com. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
That's great.
GoMileHigh.com.
Pretty young Popsy, we must make it back to Camelot so I can listen to GoMileHigh.com.
Oh, who goes there?
It is I, King Arthur, on his mighty steed. Let me in the castle at once. I must get to my quarters to listen in to the best in Colorado's sports lifestyle programming.
But, sir, don't we live in medieval Wales?
No, Popsy, you mustn't ask questions when I'm listening about my beloved Broncos. Ah, GoMileHigh.com.
Hey, Colorado sports fans. You're listening to GoMileHigh.com, a student-operated station live from the Colorado Media School Studios here in Belmar, giving you a different perspective on all things current.
Stop torturing yourself, man! Live in the now!
So stay tuned to see what's coming up next on GoMileHigh.com, Colorado's sports lifestyle.
Showing.
And welcome back to the Press Box here on GoMileHigh.com, a part of the Be On Air Network. I am still joined with Tanner, Sam, and Ty on the board. I am your host, KJ, just chilling, talking sports, doing what we love, because what's better than talking sports? With that being said, we're going to talk about one of the tougher topics in sports, and it just so happened to be the Colorado Rockies.
It's not tough. It's not tough once you figure out what they are.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. They spend a lot of time telling you what they are not, that it's hard for you to figure out exactly what they are, because every time that you try to give them a leeway or you try to give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, they take it away from you by being stupid, by going on long losing streak.
Yeah, man. It's like as soon as you watch them defeat the Dodgers, take them, best them 2 out of 3, then lose 5 out of 6 of their next on their next stretch, it's just not anything you want to see. It's mind-boggling. It's illogical. It's irrational. I don't understand
it's
it.
All of it.
I hate the Rockies so much sometimes, man. It's the most bothersome thing ever.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you this much. I was thinking about this earlier. I think the Colorado Rockies, they remind me of like McDonald's French fries in a sense that, like, when they're hot, oh my God, you love them. But when they're cold, they're the most disgusting, despicable thing probably on the face of planet Earth.
And then you try too hard to reheat them and they blow up in your microwave.
Exactly. So that perfectly describes the Colorado Rockies. So
they're
anybody
the
who's
listening, huh? They're better than reheat them in the oven. They turn out better that way.
Yes, but Ty, see, there's no metaphorical oven for the conversation
we're having right now. No. Not for this season, not for the Rockies. But
yeah, no.
What I wanted to do is kind of dive into tonight's game. So they're in a series currently with the Oakland A's.
Starting off the series, first game.
Yeah, first game. After dropping 2 games to the Angels, 1-5-2 on Saturday, and then Sunday, 5-3. So they are currently still on this homestand, and they're going to be here for a little while. So they have a 2-game homestand against the Athletics. And then they have a 4-game homestand against the Dodgers. And then after that, they go on the road against the Giants. Now, here's the thing. I think they need to win both games against the Athletics, split this series with the Dodgers, and win 3 out of 4 against the Giants just to get themselves a real chance. Because
real chance of what? You ain't say what you saying they got a chance at.
A real chance of them getting in the playoffs.
That last wild card. That one game playoff.
Playoffs? Playoffs? Talk about the playoffs?
Playoffs?
But yeah, how about this?
I had to find the page.
The early, and I know they were hot when they faced them, but early in the season, Sensatella got his first win against the Oakland Athletics. They beat him 8-3 the first game, and they beat him 5-1 the second game, sweeping that 2-game series. So I think that it is very possible that they could actually sweep this series against the A's. I know the A's are a little bit hotter now, but anything's possible still.
Yeah, anything's possible. Here's how I look at it. Rockies right now, according to Fangraphs.com, have a 15% chance to make the playoffs, and the Rockies have 21 wins in the National League, correct? So in all three divisions of the National League in the Major League MLB, there are only three teams that do not have at least 21 wins. That would be the Diamondbacks, Pirates, and the Nationals. Every other team has at least 21 wins. What I'm trying to say, and what the picture I'm trying to paint here, is that the Rockies are quite literally competing against every team in the National League except for three for these playoff spots. It's not like they're fighting uphill, getting a head start, or there's only two teams they're competing with. It is a battle royale right now. Some Fortnite, PUBG dropped on the island, look for the gun, find the rock, last man standing stuff.
Yeah, no, seriously.
And I don't know if the Rockies are equipped or trained for that type of fight.
I don't think they are either. Sam, you brought up a good point about, you know, how they got off to a good start against the Oakland A's earlier in the season. Now, I want to pose this question. There's only one Rockies player currently with double-digit home runs. Who is it?
Chuck Nasty?
That would be Chuck?
Nope.
It's not Chuck Nasty?
Mm-mm.
T Story?
Hmm.
Yep.
Oh, really?
So, okay. And I brought that point up quiet. Because... Huh?
He's been kind of quiet.
Yeah,
I haven't heard much about those.
He has, man. He's batting right under 300 on the season. So
that's still pretty good, though. That's still a story season.
Yeah, Tapia is batting 302. He only has one home run on the season.
Yeah, he's not really a home run hitter. Yeah, he's a contact guy. He's been getting those base hits and doubles, triples. He's really fast. My favorite thing about Tapia is he does that, like, he'll foul the ball off and then he'll smell the bat. He's not as crazy, and he don't like lick it, but he'll give it a nice smell.
All right, so here's some stats for you. So Nolan Arenado in his career versus Manea, which is the pitcher for the Oakland A's tonight. Blackman and Arenado are both batting .667 against him.
That's not a good number for a pitcher.
Not at all. Nice. So.
I mean, you think Charlie Blackman got off to that really hot start, was hitting like over 400 for quite a while. He's still at 333.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, they definitely got to get something going against the Oakland A's.
Yeah, no question.
Get the bats rolling.
And so that's the thing. Like, early on in the season, I talked about this on this show with several of you guys. You know, earlier in the season, it was the bats that carried the Rockies, and then the pitchers kind of sustained. That's exactly what I said this season was going to be. I said it was going to be a sprint. It was going to be on the hitters to carry, and it was going to be on the pitchers to sustain. And the Rockies have lost sight of the ability to carry via hitting, and they have lost the ability to sustain with the pitchers. Now, we can always question did they ever have it. But I try to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Man, what is new? Are we here – in Colorado, Denver, Colorado, as Rockies fans, the equivalent to what the Cleveland Browns fans in the NFL are, is that us? Like, what is the Rockies fan base equivalent to what they have to deal with to like an NFL team? You know what I mean? Are the Rockies fans the Browns fans? Are the Rockies fans the Jags fans? Are the Rockies fans the Cowboys fans that always have a good team but somehow find a way to be average? Like, what? Compare the Rockies fan base to an NFL fan base.
I'd say the Colts.
The Colts?
You think
the Rockies were that successful for longer than had Peyton Manning. Rockies never had that long. I would have killed to have that luxury of the like 4 or 5 years of dominance from Rockies baseball.
I just feel like they get up there, they're really hot, and then all of a sudden they just drop off. And I feel like that's what the Colts do quite often.
I feel like this is the new Browns.
Yeah, the new Browns. Maybe. Honestly,
I think the Jags simile is pretty apt since the Jags have spots where they are really very good, but then they just drop off for a long times, and then they just have really high peaks and just low long valleys.
Yeah, I can see that. And Tanner, you kind of led right into my next question, which is going to be, if the Rockies don't make the playoffs, which we have all predicted that they won't, but we're sitting here trying to be as optimistic as possible.
I'm not trying to be optimistic.
I'm on that train with you.
I know the ship is sinking. I'm watching.
I live and die with them. I don't die until the season's over.
I'm sitting here on an iceberg.
Oh, ties on the iceberg. I got you. The question is, if the Rockies don't make the playoffs, how much longer do you trust the process? Because as we all know, they've been trying to trust the process since 07.
Man, look at the Sixers. How'd the process work for them? The process, air quote process, is just a way for GMs and, you know, people with attached to teams to say, get off my butt for like 2 years while I try and throw something together. And then if in 2 years we still suck, then you get on me again. That's what the process is. The process is 2 years of where you are exempt from being berated from your fan base. But I think, I think if after this season, this horrible season where the Rockies had so much optimism, that Arenado is a really good chance. Brightest deal is him because there was that whole butting of heads before this got going. I think any reasonable commodity the Rockies have right now will want out, and it's going to be bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, I mean the Rockies have always been a mid-market team. They've always been a medium-market, like flyover city team, and the fact of the matter is they've always done the same thing for their entire history. They've operated on the same general manager for God knows how long, for my entire life up until Brightich, and even then Brightich is a disciple of that same general manager, and even then it's the same stuff and it's never worked. So at this point, for the Rockies to be relevant, for them to actually contend and do something, they have to change it up. They have to do something radical to really become relevant.
Dude, there's nothing they can do. I think the Rockies are the people. So, listen, hear me out, okay? And this is going to sound like a broken record here. Oh, the Rockies just need some pitching and they'll be good because they have all this offense, right? They have all this offense. Let me finish. They have all this offense because Coors Field, the altitude, no matter how much the humidor and all the stuff you want to try and say makes a difference, it does not. It really doesn't make that much of a difference because Coors Field is still known as a hitter's park. And because you have all that great offense from these players, you're never going to be able to get pitching. So I think that is the conundrum the Rockies face. Pitchers will never come here. That means you need to develop pitchers, find pitchers and develop them. And I don't know if Brightich is competent enough to do so.
Well, he starts he trades them.
And that also, I don't understand it. So if the key is pitching, and for 10, 15 years, the Rockies have been trying to get some damn pitching and they still haven't found any damn pitching, I don't think they're finding any pitching.
Yeah, the Monforts need to step in and do something with the organization, you know. Maybe make some changes. Definitely get Brightage out of there because he's not obviously working. And unfortunately, you might even have to let go of the coach.
You know what?
The manager.
You say let go of the manager. I think it all starts at the top. Bad ownership, it leaks down. It's like a bad oil leak, man. Eventually, that oil will start to spread to other parts. Like, I don't know, man. You know what? Forget about it. Moving on. You know, they say if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Rockies need to find a way to fix something. There you go.
Yeah.
We're going around the NFL next, man. I don't have a tease out, man. This is the Press Box on GoMyHot.com, part of Beyond Our Network.
Every day, across this country, hundreds of college radio stations take to the air, broadcasting music and programming that you won't hear anywhere else.
It's one of the last places where people can really be able to actually say what they want to say.
Without it, you wouldn't have a place for local artists to perform. Certain people need to have a chance, a fighting chance, and college radio is that place for it.
College radio changes the lives of those who are involved with it and can change those who listen to it too.
This is where we start out, you know? From getting all this great experience working in college radio, it makes you want to work in real radio.
College radio means finding yourself. It helped me find what I wanted to do in not only school, but in life.
So support college radio by continuing to listen to this station and supporting the students who make it happen. College radio, now, more than ever. A message brought to you by this station and the College Radio Foundation. For more information, please visit collegeradio.org.
Taking a trip over to Tibet, you know, see the sights, climb a hill or two. But I remember, oh man, I got one guy out here who I actually know. So I give an old ringy dingy to the Lama.
What?
You know, the Dalai Lama, his laminescence, flowing robes, grace, bald, striking really. I says to the Lama, hey, you remember that round I caddied for you down in Shangri-La? Well, apparently some station out in Lakewood taped the whole thing.
Oh.
See, the Lama's a big hitter. Nailed two eagles in a row that day. Well, he says, what station could have possibly gotten all the way out to my sacred holy lands, the Shangri? I says it was none other than GoMileHigh.com, Lama. They got the best sports coverage in the state. The Lama actually tips me this time, 2-1. So he pretty much stiffed me again. But I got him hooked on GoMileHigh.com. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
That's great.
GoMileHigh.com.
Pretty young Popsy, we must make it back to Camelot so I can listen to GoMileHigh.com.
Oh, who goes there?
It is I, King Arthur on his mighty steed. Let me in the castle at once. I must get to my quarters to listen in to the best in Colorado's sports lifestyle programming.
But sir, don't we live in medieval Wales?
No, Popsy, you mustn't ask questions when I'm listening about my beloved Broncos. Ah, GoMileHigh.com.
Hey, Colorado sports fans. You're listening to GoMileHigh.com, a student-operated station live from the Colorado Media School Studios here in Belmar, giving you a different perspective on all things current.
Stop torching yourself, man! Live in the now!
So stay tuned to see what's coming up next on GoMileHigh.com, Colorado's sports lifestyle.
Showing!
And welcome back to the Press Box here on GoMileHigh.com, a part of the Be On Air Network. This, unfortunately, happens to be the last segment, but this doesn't have to be the end. If you enjoy what you heard, you know, you can always get more on Twitter. You can follow me at KJ the GOAT. So that's KJTHEGOATTT.
At Tanner Freeze for all the sports opinions, betting opinions, and combat sports opinions you desire.
At the underscore Wallraven.
There you go.
I post whatever.
Cool.
And at Fuji underscore TY.
There you go. So it's as simple as that. You know, you guys can follow us and you'll see some of the crazy, kinky, unbelievable things that we post sometimes.
Yeah, cute dog pictures a lot.
There you go. I like to take pictures of rugs and post them.
I hit send before reading, FYI.
All right. We're going around the NFL. So Ty, cue up the music. Alrighty, here we go. Starting off with the Thursday night game, we have the Houston Texans versus the Kansas City Chiefs. I think that the Texans did all they could with what they had, and the Chiefs did what the Chiefs are pretty much going to do for the majority of the year. Basically, I'm just waiting on week three, Ravens, Chiefs.
See, I disagree. Yeah. I think the Chiefs did not do some of the things they were going to do the entirety of this year. The Chiefs, Mahomes, every completed pass he had was less than 20 yards. As you know, he is a gunslinger, and that offense is going to be thrown around some explosive plays. So I think that without in the without that presence of 20-yard-plus passing plays, 34 points, and effortless offensive performance, scary, man. It's scary.
I mean, why go over the top when they give you everything underneath?
Yeah, I mean, you're playing Bill Obidiot. I mean, you're going to get basically anything you want from him. So they're scary. They're definitely a scary team, but they definitely you know, what is it? Without preseason, I think that had a lot to do with it. A lot of these teams needed to get that chemistry back. So,
yeah,
we'll see. I think they're going to be scared.
Last thing on the Texans. Deshaun Watson's not coming out of Clemson was that he cannot make any reads pre-snap. He can't read the defense, can't read where the blitz coming from, can't see where the hot throw is going to be in the coverage. And if you're Bill O'Brien, you got 3 years to work on that, and you still have made no progression. You can't develop a quarterback.
Point blank, period.
Yeah, period. Yeah, I think the Chiefs are just taking it easy. Playing within themselves, doing what they only needed to do because they knew. They knew that this Texans team was gutted from the offseason. They didn't have to put in too much effort.
Yeah, no question. Hey, like Mahomes said, it's ring season, baby. Seahawks, Falcons. I think the Seahawks did exactly what they needed to do. This is the season where Russell Wilson has to take the reign if they're going to come out of the NFC West. No more Chris Carson, yes, like, get him the ball. I'm not saying go away from the running game. All I'm saying is you have to run everything through Russell Wilson because there's Kyler Murray on his back. There's the San Francisco 49ers, the LA Rams. Everybody in that division except for the 49ers are 1-0. And I am here to tell you right now that if Russell Wilson is not leading the charge this season, the Seahawks will be sitting at home.
Yeah, man, you got weapons this year. Distribute that ball around. Get it out to Tyler Lockett. Get it out to DK Metcalf. Get it out to Greg Olsen, who got his first Seattle Seahawks touchdown. My big thing from this game is actually the amount of touches Todd Gurley got. 14 rushes and a few receptions. I want to see if he sustains that workload because that was the big thing with him in Los Angeles last year. His arthritis. Nobody knew how he was going to be played. Nobody knew how healthy he really was. I want to see how long Todd Gurley lasts.
Yeah, I mean, the Falcons actually looked really good to me. I was kind of surprised about that.
Dude, three 100-yard receivers.
Like, I know Matt Ryan, like, he's called Matty Ice for a reason, but he came out and he was a gunslinger. It was a good game, but, I mean, Seattle just got the upper edge on him. And Russell Wilson, he needs to either take charge and show people that he deserves to be an MVP or at least in the conversation. I heard earlier on the show that he's never received one MVP vote. Russell Wilson has never received a single MVP vote. And I mean, he's got to do something about that, and he's got to use his weapons.
Yeah, man, that's ridiculous that he's not one single MVP vote. That's asinine.
That's the most repugnant thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, but if anything, the Seahawks look like the favorites in the NFC right now. They have their team looks extremely, or at least their offense looks very complete. And they should contend. They should contend in the NFC West. They should contend in the NFC. They should lead the NFC West, I should say.
Yeah, no doubt. The next two games we shouldn't spend too much time on. Jets, Bills. Consensus here, Jets suck. Bills are emerging as the leaders in the AFC East.
Took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah. That's it for me, man. Yeah, Bills are looking okay. Jets looks like bad. And
I wish we had a plane crash sound effects.
As long as Josh Allen doesn't fumble the ball backwards again.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And not a depressing jet turbine sound. A propeller plane crashing.
For no preseason, this was a great 2-0 for the Bills.
Man, let me ask you this. Who had it worse, the Lions fans or the here, I'll ask this question after that we go through the Bengals game.
Okay, well, I got Bears, Lions, Knicks.
Yeah,
so go ahead.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I got to get to the – got to wait for the Bengals game.
Okay, I got you. So, Bears, Lions, it's pretty simple. Lions can't get a stop, and they are undisciplined. I mean, you have several guys who are doing things that they had no business on defense. Jamie Collins was known as one of the most disciplined linebackers in all of the NFL, and to see him do what he did to that referee was ridiculous.
It was 23-6 going into the fourth quarter. It was 23-6 going into the fourth quarter, and the Lions allowed 21 unanswered points to Mitchell Trubisky and the Bears.
Yeah.
And then DeAndre Swift, I mean –
and then they barely use
if you
Allen
didn't
Robinson,
see
their number one receiver.
Who free Allen Robinson is trending on Twitter. If you didn't see DeAndre Swift drop the game winner and see the Lions fans' reaction, you got to find that.
Although credit to where it's due, Trubisky, the game winner to Anthony Miller was a legitimately good throw from Trubisky.
What do we always say about a blind squirrel?
Yeah. Or a broken clock.
Yeah.
How long before the Lions go after a new quarterback? Like Matt Stafford.
This draft, probably.
They got to. I mean, they can't keep doing this. They've been terrible.
What do you mean? I think Stafford's a good quarterback. I just think he's always had an incompetent coach and a subpar weapons. And
you know, as a matter of fact, put Stafford on the Chargers. I bet you they make the playoffs.
I would agree with that statement 100%.
But also, when are you expecting Matt Patricia to get fired? Caldwell got fired for 9-7. Patricia, what week do you expect Patricia to get fired?
Mark my words, if the Detroit Lions start off the season 0-4, or anything 0-4 or more, he's going to get fired before.
Well, the Lions
over.
Fired Caldwell, like Tyson, for going 9-7. Patricia at this point is 9-23-1.
Man, did you guys see how big he got? He got a lot bigger over the offseason.
He's eating pencils.
I guess. All right, moving on.
All right, Packers Vikings. The consensus here is A-Rod is not going anywhere. Vikings,
he's
I think.
He's angry.
Hey, man.
I was wrong. This is my takeaway from this. Whenever people think the Vikings are going to be good, they're bad. Whenever people think the Vikings are going to be bad, they're good.
That is the truth, because I really thought the Vikings was going to suck last year.
I think the Vikings need that crowd, though. They did not perform without that energy in the stadium.
You can say that about every single home team. Not having the advantage of the crowd noise for the opposing offense is huge.
I think the domes got hit worse, though, because like New Orleans and the Vikings, like, you could just see it a lot.
Well, those aren't just domes. Those are also like some of the loudest fan bases. Like, you know, they hold those accolades, you know, like Kansas City, Denver, Seattle, things like teams like that are really going to feel the hit on those home games.
Yeah.
All right. Dolphins, Patriots. Consensus is they're going to run a lot in New England. Just simple. Plus, the Dolphins are just waiting on Tua Tagovailoa to get healthy.
My consensus is that Cam is going to go. Man, I don't think Cam makes it the entire season.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if he can stay durable.
Can't handle that workload.
How many runs did he do?
15 rushes, man.
He's coming off of being hurt multiple times.
He was. 15 for 75 and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's his body can't hold up to that.
That's
how he played when he
played
for
the Panthers.
But he's got to play that short game that the Patriots like to play.
Yeah, and that offense is all good and dandy against the Dolphins. If you go up against the Chiefs, Ravens, or a top tier offense where you need to, when you go down 14 points and you need to score in like 5 minutes or less, that ain't gonna cut it.
All right, Eagles, Washington Redskins.
I love it.
Eagles, a work in progress. The Washington football team, about 2 or 3 years away from being 2 or 3 years away.
8 sacks for the Washington football team. This is the best defensive line in the game, I think, or at least the best 4-3 front in the NFL. And my goodness, Carson Wentz, watching those makeshift offensive line trying to protect him, it was men amongst boys.
I'd take the Steelers D-line over that D-line, but hey.
Oh, I would not.
They're up and coming.
I would not.
But to be fair to the Eagles. Just give Haskins some playing time, and they might be a very dangerous team.
Well, he's the starter, so.
Honestly, I'm surprised Carson Wentz didn't die in this game.
And Riverboat Ron
they slapped him behind a Swiss cheese.
If the Washington Redskins if the Washington football team finishes anything better than 6-10, is Ron Rivera coach of the year with the cancer situation going on?
No.
I don't think that they played.
Probably
that
not. Okay. They're probably not going to give the coach of the year to a losing team.
We got to go no huddle.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and touch on the most important games from the afternoon. Buccaneers, Saints. I think the consensus is, you know, Buccaneers still need some work in progress. I mean, you know, you didn't have a preseason. Still need
no continuity throughout the whole team.
Yeah, no question, man. So they're probably going to be 10-6, 11-5 at best.
I'll tell you what, Gronk looks like he just needs to retire again.
I knew this was going to happen. OJ Howard is a better tight end. He's going to have a better season.
Way better.
Younger, faster, man.
I just can't believe Gronk came back faster, after healthier. Saying his body was so hurt.
Let's go 49ers versus the Hobbit.
I definitely think that the Cardinals are going to get in the playoffs this year.
I've been saying it. Absolutely. I've been saying it this whole offseason. I've been saying it.
It's amazing that that defense is turnaround. They look good. They look great from the worst offense.
Hey, shout out. Chandler Jones had 19 and a half sacks last season. So
at Isaiah Simmons, man, who can do it all on defense, safety, linebacker, rush passer.
The Raiders and the Panthers?
Man, what is Matt Rhule? What was he thinking on that? I didn't like that. I thought the Panthers had that one in the bag.
That's what I'm saying. And then you go and give up that touchdown. Like, what the heck was that?
Bridgewater looks rookie. So good now.
Yeah, rookie head coach in his first NFL game. Just
gotta learn.
Total. Can't say it.
Screw
can't,
that one up.
Can't say it.
It's not college anymore.
Right. Last game, Cowboys Rams. Cowboys are going to have another 8-8 season.
Here we go.
I think Dak is probably not going to get that big contract. I love Dak Prescott, big fan of Mississippi connection.
Should have taken that 35 mil.
One of my good friends is a diehard Cowboys fan, and he posted right after the game, the Cowboys will never win a Super Bowl with Dak Prescott as their quarterback. And I agree with him.
Well, there's a reason that Aaron Rodgers checked out and changed every damn play Mike McCarthy called in Green Bay the past two seasons he was there. His offense sucks. It's outdated. It's a lot of short, like, 2-3 yard curls in the middle field with drags behind it and one deep route. It's not a 2020 modern NFL offense, and there's going to be a lot of issues with that team investing that much in that. They got all the weapons you want, but I don't think they got the man at the helm. McCarthy.
They heard Fat Jason Garrett. That's basically what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And also, what was that 4th-and-3 call?
I think,
what was that?
Yeah, how do you not tie the game?
I don't know.
That
pass interference call was one of the most egregious I've seen in a while. Like, he literally did nothing
since
to
New Orleans.
Extend up. Like,
you want to know what else is egregious? Not giving Cam Akers the football in that game. Got Malcolm Brown out there getting all those carries.
Yeah, okay.
Not calling timeouts at the end of the Broncos game.
We talked about that. We don't have to harp on the same wound twice.
I'm telling you, I'm scared about the Steelers too. They look good.
They played the Giants.
But their defense.
They played the
good.
Giants.
You got Ben back. Ooh, it's gonna be a matchup.
Oh, yeah, you got
definitely
ben
gonna
back.
Be a good one, man. So, thank you all so much for tuning in to this edition of the Press Box. Come back again tomorrow. Caleb Shirt will be driving the press box, so it's going to be a good one. And if you like hockey, then tomorrow will definitely be your show. This is the Press Box here on GoMileHigh.com, a part of the Be On Air Network.